Any physicist will tell you sound is basically the motion of something. It's vibration. Well, cells vibrate. All those little tiny cells that make up your body have parts that are moving all the time. Does that mean your cells make sound? And could you, if you built a microphone small enough, actually hear them? Last year, UCLA nanotechnologist James Jezewski answered that question. He built a microscopic microphone and produced the first ever recording of the sound cells make.
It's not really like a microphone. It's perhaps more analogous to an old-fashioned gramophone needle, in the sense that we touch the cell with a very fine needle, which is attached to a very fine spring, and we record the motion. And then we, just like a gramophone, amplify that motion into sound.
What was it like when you finally were able to set up the experiment and hear it for the first time?
Well, to me, it was a magnificent experience because I realized that no one had done this before, and I'd never expected it myself. The scientists that worked with me, the biochemists that produced these cells, they didn't expect it. And, you know, whenever one comes across something totally unexpected as a scientist, you think, well, you know, this is a new part of knowledge. This is something that was not known before. And it's a marvelous feeling.
Now, I have to confess, I've heard these sounds that you have available on your website. And in fact, maybe we'll play one. I wouldn't have guessed that's the sound of a cell. Did it surprise you when you heard that for the first time?
It did surprise me, and it's interesting you say it didn't sound what I would imagine the sound of a cell would sound like. That means you have some, you know, preconception of what a cell might sound like, okay? And I guess you would imagine some kind of, what, slushy, kind of strange, slurping type of noise.
Is that what you imagined?
Yeah. In a way, I would imagine, because a cell is quite soft, I would expect a kind of low, liquidy sound, like jello or something, you see?
It's the problem with the human mind for the scientist, isn't it? On the one hand, the imagination is what leads you to make the discovery, but the mind gets in the way by making suggestions to you.
You know, the mind, that it's used to everyday experiences. And so it translates things from everyday experience, even down to when you look at something small. So you expect a small thing to behave more or less like a big thing. And, you know, for 100 years, we know when things get very small, quantum mechanics takes over and all sorts of strange phenomena that are not obvious to us because they are not in the common experience that we have day to day.
And I read in some of the material about your discovery that you even did some experiments that you would say make the cells scream.
Yes. The screaming cells is a famous story because it appeared on the front cover of the LA Weekly, which is a magazine usually devoted to rock musicians and the likes. What we did in the early days of the experiment was to investigate the sound. We dropped a little bit of alcohol onto the cells, and the cells responded by emitting a different type of sound, which sounded like screaming, and I called it screaming cells. And screaming cells somehow caught on with the public in general, you know, the idea of screaming cells.
Well, one of the things about this is the realization, and maybe it's the mind getting in the way again, that if one cell can scream like this, or one cell can simply make a sound like this, it's not unreasonable to assume that every cell in our body is humming a tune of some sort or another. That's a little uncanny, isn't it?
Yes, but it's a realistic concept. Inside every cell, there are little protein machines, motors, and they're responsible for the fact that you're alive. If they weren't working, you wouldn't be alive. So every one of your cells does have motion associated with it. And the idea that the motions may be coupled in some way is perhaps not unrealistic. And it even actually sort of relates to some concepts in, for instance, traditional Chinese medicine, which is a more holistic approach. So that's something we are really interested to look into. Is there a characteristic vibration for different cells in your body?
What would you do with this information, assuming you're able to record it, assuming there is a noticeable difference between cells of one kind and cells of another? What would you do with that information, do you think? How might you apply it?
Well, my intuition tells me that every cell has associated with it an associated vibration. We do more or less know that if a cell is sick, let me use the word sick generically, there will be some change in the machinery of the cell. That is pretty clear to me. So if we listen to enough cells, we could have a method of diagnosing, hopefully, diseases that has never been tried before. It's quite natural to you, for instance, to go to a doctor and have the doctor listen to your heart with a stethoscope. Now, these cells in the heart, they're called cardiomyocytes, they are a collection of cells that are actually moving together. So when the doctor listens to your heart, he is simply listening to the collective motion of all of those cells. Now, if we could do this on a much more subtle level at the scale of one or two cells, we would have a very, very interesting technique to potentially look at disease on a new basis.
So you could listen to someone's heart and hear the bad cells that are there, maybe.
We could listen to not only their heart, but we could listen to any parts that are not normally associated with, you know, a large amount of motion like the heart.
How far do you think it might be possible to take this?
You know, I never believe in limits. I never believe in limits. I am not, on the other hand, someone who is just wildly optimistic. I'm aware there are many stumbling blocks. There are things that can stop one's research. But as a scientist, I love to just go full speed and see how far I can go. And there was a time, you know, many years ago where I believed there were always limits. But I have been around scientific discoveries over the last 30 years where I realized that, you know, my limits in where I think something can go can be a hindrance to you. So you have to work without ego, without fear of failure, and just see how far you do go. And when you do fail, well, that is part of being a scientist. It's not something, you know, you have to be miserable about. It's just the process of discovery and not having some, you know, worries or doubts about what one does. I think that's the important thing. So I really don't know.
Don't you sometimes wonder, we have been able to delve so deeply into things we couldn't see 10 years ago, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. You always wonder if there isn't one more depth that we're going to pick up 10 years from now or 20 years from now.
Oh, I am sure. I am sure that, you know, a number of years ago, people believed that we've kind of learned all we could learn. Not at all, no. I think particularly when it comes to life and biological systems, Mother Nature is such an exquisitely, I wouldn't say, you know, it's complicated for us, but for nature, it's so exquisitely created that there are so many layers that we still have to learn about. And the idea that we, you know, decode the human genome and that's that, that is not that. There is so much more. And I think we are moving into a systems approach where we're not dissecting things, taking things apart molecule by molecule, but we're going back to more a holistic almost approach, because biological systems don't just work like a watch with little wheels connected to each other. It's much more complicated. Everything interacts together as one.
I was thinking about you talking about the Chinese medicine, holistic medicine, mm-hmm. acupuncture, for instance. In some ways, there is a similarity between acupuncture and the kind of listening to a cell that you're doing, isn't there? You're touching very yeah. lightly.
I recently visited China. It was a meeting called Qi and Complexity. Qi is a kind of term for the exchange of energy in the body in traditional Chinese medicine. There's a whole area, I believe, there where we may find that using these very, very fine nanotechnology techniques that we may see an interesting kind of correlation to what goes on in Chinese medicine, because in the highest form of traditional Chinese medicine, the absolute highest form relies upon the analysis of more or less vibrations, and the body has these vibrations.
So in a way, what you're doing is creating the world's tiniest acupuncture needle.
yeah, it's more or less that, yeah.
So you can listen to the cell.
Listen. Listen to it, and when I say we're listening to it by feeling it, and you mentioned earlier looking, you know, we have reached the limits of what we can see. And the interesting thing is when you reach the limits of what you can see, we are now relying on this tactile sense, this sense of feeling, not looking. And I think that's perhaps something that is a paradigm shift in the way we do science.
James Jimczewski is a professor in the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry at UCLA.